This is John Amis talking about music from London, and today the programme is mostly devoted to Yehudi Menuhin. But before him, we have a celebrated virtuoso of the keyboard. King-sized playing comes from one of the smallest pianists before the public today, Shura Shekhasky. The other day he was in London and we found ourselves in front of a microphone. What shall I ask you about first? How many months a year do you spend travelling?
All the time.
All the time?
Yes.
You live out of a suitcase?
Yes, more or less.
And you like that?
Yes, I do.
You like big cities?
I like big cities.
Country bores you?
Yes, I don't enjoy so much going to small towns.
Really? Because I was talking to a pianist the other day, Fu Tsong.
Yes, I know him very well, yeah.
And he was saying that he always, much to his annoyance, finds that he plays best when he plays in some small town where people don't know him.
He told me that too, yes.
Do you find that?
No. I made up my mind that if I accept any engagements, then no matter if it's Timbuktu, I have to play the same way as I play in Festival Hall. The critics say some predictable Cherkasky, they're perfectly right, because I may play the same piece once and the next night, the same piece, and I play it entirely different, like another pianist. And if you ask me why I do it, I don't know. On the spur of the moment, sometimes I make a diminuendo instead of crescendo. And why? It isn't that I cannot make a crescendo. I just do it, I suppose, because maybe I'm looking for new sensations or something. I'm just like that.
Mm. But that's surely not a question that you find you might be bored by playing the same every night.
I really cannot sincerely analyze why I do it.
Yeah.
I do things on an impulse. I even live in an impulse, more or less. And I suppose it shows in playing.
Yes.
Concert life takes everything out of you. You have to be a slave to your music. No time at all for personal life. So when the summer comes, you probably think that I travel the way I do. I would go somewhere in a quiet place and rest. No, I travel. For instance, last year, I went to the Orient, just for fun. Uh-huh. India, Ceylon, Bangkok, Hong Kong, and Japan.
Can you work on journeys?
Yes. My managers write that Mr. Cherkasky does not want to rest. Please meet him. Take him straight to the studio. He doesn't have time to go up to his room in a hotel. He wants to go to practice immediately. I'm very extreme. I practice like a maniac. And that's why I don't want to touch a note during my vacation. And as far as new repertoire goes, I practice during my traveling. I can concentrate much better. I suppose I'm quite different than anybody you've met.
Do you memorize easily?
Yes, it just sort of comes. I don't try, it just comes.
You have a fairly general repertoire. I mean, you play a lot of Prokofiev, but mostly you play classics.
No, I don't have any specialty at all. Mm. You know, like usual question backstage. Oh, I enjoyed you playing so much. Who is your favorite composer? Well, I haven't any favorite composer. It's too much good music.
Do you play contemporary music?
Yes, some. Not enough. I like it very much.
Do you like Cats?
Yes, very much. Why do you ask?
Well, your agent said that
oh,
you
yes.
had a passion against Cats once upon a time, and now you're for Cats.
Oh, that's right, yes. Well, as a child, they said, don't touch Cats because you will lose your memory. And, of course, it was a very silly thing, but, you know, children are so impressionistic. I really thought that I would forget everything if I touched Cats. So. As a matter of fact, it was Mrs. Tillett, my agent. She says, nonsense, touch mine. I did, and I never regretted it.
Where was your childhood spent?
In Odessa.
Odessa, that's where all the violinists come from, isn't it?
Yes, and some pianists too. Moisevich came from Odessa. Departman came from Odessa. Well, I studied with my mother until I was 11. Then I went to America, and immediately Joseph Hoffman, who was interested, and I spent quite a few years with him.
Hmm. Was he, I mean, Rachmaninoff thought that Hoffman was the greatest pianist he ever heard, didn't he?
Well, he was at that time one of the very greatest pianists.
Who were the pianists, would you say, that had influenced you most?
Well, to me, there is no one like Horowitz. No one. Hmm. To me, he is just like a god, even if I don't agree with him sometimes.
Do you ever find yourself bored by music that's too easy, that doesn't contain technical problems?
No, I'm not bored because of that. Actually, it didn't enter my mind.
Does anything ever enter your mind when you're playing before an audience?
No.
You're not conscious of them at all?
No. Well, yes, one is always conscious of audience, but it isn't the main thing. I try to lose myself in the music. An audience can inspire you. I like to practice very hard or play before public, but intimate gatherings, I'm not good at it even. I can't lose myself.
Do you find when you make records that it doesn't worry you there being no audience?
No, I don't feel that way at all, no. Hmm. Because mentally I'm already adjusted. Oh, subconsciously I think that this will be heard by millions. Hmm.
Fabulous playing. Well, that was Shura Shakaski playing the Hungarian Fantasy with the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra and Karajan. And now, life with the Menuhins. I thought, for a change, it might be interesting to chercher la femme, to find out how the wife of a world-famous artist copes, how she can be a loving companion, a housekeeper, a secretary, and a public relations officer rolled into one, because that's what it amounts to. Mrs. Menuhin was formerly an artist herself, Diana Gould, the ballet dancer. So I asked her how she coped with her job.
Oh. Well, I suppose, really, I've managed so far by refusing to analyse anything, because I have a horrible feeling, like all the English, that if I don't look at a thing long enough, it might go away. And now I've come to the point where I've reached such saturation that if you ask me what I do, I can't tell you. If you ask me what I don't do, I can tell you. Easier.
Do you pack his shirts?
Yes, of course I do. Because Yehudi is one of those people who doesn't think of himself at all, from A to Z, ever. He doesn't, as a person, he doesn't exist for himself. So you'd have to pack his shirts, else he'd go out in his underwear. And he wouldn't see anything wrong with it, at all. This morning he came to see me off in a howling gale in Highgate in the rain, in a cotton kimono, thinking he was perfectly all right, but he was soaked to the knees before the car had driven off. So, what you do is you fill up the eternal vacuum that Yehudi creates around him. He has no sight for the immediate, no sight for the detail, no sight for himself or what's around him. He has the most incredible vision. He can see everything, where you and I will stop being able to see anything.
It's sort of infrared rather than local.
Yes, exactly. It's a synoptic view of life he has. He can see as clearly as anything the enormous questions, the big issues, the wider importances, where you and I will give up, where our brain or our mind won't reach. This is Yehudi, where Yehudi can see. This is his vision. But the focus, the immediate focus around himself, doesn't exist at all.
But isn't this absolutely infuriating?
Well, it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating because there's never a dull moment. But I am fetched down from the chandelier about six times a day, minimum.
And yet there is, within this it always seems to me, rather saintly character.
Yes.
There's a sort of streak of canniness somewhere, isn't there?
Yes.
He does get to the right place on time. You can't be with him all the time, but I mean, he does get on time, and schemes do start, schools do open.
Ah, yes.
Pupils are there.
Are there. Yes, well, that's just it, you see, because he's such an inspiring person. He has the big idea, and we all come limping after with the details. Just like that. And this is the job. I mean, the job, as I said, to be close to him is the most fascinating thing on earth, because you are in the position, shall I say, that any very personal private secretary is to any man who cannot and shouldn't be bothered with the details once more. He shouldn't have to bother about the details. So that it's up to you to see that he does get there on time. There's myself, and there's my wonderful housekeeper, Millie, and there are other devoted people who see to it, you see, who ring the front door bell and say that we're waiting 10 minutes for you, Mr. Mannion, you must come downstairs. He will then be standing on his head, of course, blissfully unconscious of anything, halfway to Nirvana. So it'll be either Mrs. McBride, the chauffeurs, or it'll be Millie, who'll say to him, come downstairs, the car is waiting, and you've got to be at the Elgar recording within 25 minutes, and the traffic is bad. So then he gets right way up, and then you go and say, have you got your coat? Oh, no. I said, the snow on the ground. Oh, is there? Yes. Did you see? Oh, it's so pretty. Yes, but that means coat. All right. Have you got your gloves? Oh, I don't need gloves, but your hands are icy. Oh, no, they're not. Millie says, have you got any money? And the answer is inevitably, yes. Then you say, look again, and he puts his hand in his pocket and brings out 10 pengos. And you say, well, that isn't much use if you have to pick up a taxi any time. So then Millie says, come along, and puts a pound in his pocket. And then says, there are 2 half-crowns in the other pocket for the tip for the driver when you come back. And this is how it goes on when you say he does get there. Well, this is how he gets there, I might say.
And has he ever missed a concert?
He's never missed a concert, but he has arrived thinking he was playing another concerto. And been quite happy when he found he was playing one he hadn't played for 3 years. Oh, he said. Oh, well, that's rather nice. True. I think it is his tremendous power of relaxation, which comes again from never being concentrated on himself, but always on what he wants to do. This is the highest form of the artistic egotism. I mean, an artist must be an egoist. It's absolute nonsense. If any wife expects an artist to not to look upon his music as the first thing in his life. I mean, this is not professional. It means that the artist himself is completely unbalanced. This is the first thing, the most important. And if that is in place, then everything else is in place. And his is the highest kind. It's the music that counts. Luckily, I, being an old professional, love it that way. The boys like it that way. We all like it that way. But because he's so utterly unselfish in the personal way, he probably takes more looking after than any other musician on earth.
Perhaps I shouldn't say this to the wife, but I do feel with Yehudi that one never knows whether he's going to play on top form or perhaps it'll be something less than good. But
yes, well,
it's always worth taking a chance,
yes,
on Yehudi.
Well, it's never badly. It's less than his top. In other words, if you are Yehudi, it's less good than his best. And when you are the top, then, of course, you have this tremendous level to keep up. When he plays less well. Mm. But Yehudi has never yet said he plays well. This is one of the most depressing, the only few depressing things in life with him. Is that after he's played superbly, you'll go round to the artist room, very full of pleasure, and you'll find a very still, pale face with a vague blue eye, and you'll say, oh, it was lovely tonight. You know, the audience still roaring, and he having gone out about 8 times. And you'll say, no, it was better at rehearsal. That's the best I can expect. Never. He's never yet, I've never yet known him satisfied with anything he's done. Ever. And as you say, if he does let his level drop more lower than it should for Yehudi Menuhin, it is because he undertakes so much that either it comes to a point where it's either that he is seeing to the immense detail which is needed with his instrument. The violin needs more attending to than a piano does.
Surely does.
It is an appalling, absolutely elusive instrument. And what he cares for more than the grooming of the violin is the playing of the music. And this is where, as you say, he's apt to go on. Play, perhaps occasionally less well, only because he cannot understand that this needed more time than it did. Because he is, again, one of those people who doesn't think of things in progressions of detail. He sees the far point, and he thinks the rest is going to fill itself up. The difficulty with him is to make him aware where he should be aware in order to look after himself, and yet not to spoil the essential fabric. This is the terrible danger that I want, that keeps me worried all the time. He should be more aware in ways of, if he were a man who thought, I'm having a great effect, I'm Yehudi Menuhin, everybody's out there listening to me, then, as you say, he might take more trouble and say, no, I shouldn't accept this, or I shouldn't do that, because I really won't have time to prepare it. All he thinks of is, I can't wait to play the viola next week. Mm. Oh, I can't wait to undertake that piece that so-and-so would like me to play so much. And, oh, there's another composer, nobody's played this piece for ages. You know, nobody played the Bloch concert until Yehudi dug it up and played it. All those things, it's always that that occurs to him, the music, the playing of it, the pleasure it's going to give, or the help it's going to give to somebody, which is absolutely 100% non-professional approach.
Tell me about the school and how long has it been going?
Well, the school was again one of those wonderful projects. Yehudi has always believed in ploughing back into his career, everything he's got out of it, which is, I'm absolutely in agreement with him. Everybody earns, all his money, everything goes back into whatever he can do to help people. And he got, over the years, so many wretched children, talented and brilliant, coming to him who had to struggle with school and try to play the violin. Well, the violin's like the ballet. Either you start at 7 or 8 years old and you keep at it, or you never play the violin. Piano is different. Mm. If you don't twist the muscles into the right shape early on, no child can play the violin. Then the orchestras, as you know, are short of violinists. They can't find them. In the States, it's exactly the same. There aren't the same amount of wonderful, devoted Jewish parents who are willing to give up their lives to produce all the violinists that have been produced, 90% of whom have been Jewish, as you know. That doesn't exist anymore. Thirdly, in this modern life, no parents want their children to go out on a limb. There's such a sense of security and such a necessity to earn, to be able to buy things in this consuming world now, that the average parent and the average child doesn't want to risk not being a very good violinist by the time he's worked 10 years. So that Yehudi saw the only way to do it is the way the Russians have done it, in the ballet and in music. Every single concours he ever judged at, all the Russians won, always, because they had learnt and they'd been brought up in a hothouse. And instead of having to rely on the parents who will bring you up in the hothouse, you see, which doesn't happen in Anglo-Saxon or Latin countries, he thought the best thing to do is to create the general hothouse where I create the parent atmosphere. And he had meetings with people, extremely interested and interesting people of the right kind in all walks of life, who thought the idea was wonderful. And then Yehudi, in his usual way, he always puts the cart before the horse, said, I'm tired of committee meetings, I'm going to start it. So on a shoestring and a great deal of optimism, he started the school. And of course, it's a tremendous success because all the unsummonables are there. All the things that you couldn't buy with money are there. We are going to, hoping to get a good foundation for it. And I know we will.
How old are the children?
Children are range from 7 till about 15 or 16. I mean, we don't put a limit on the end. It would depend. If the child obviously needs another year and he's already 15 or 16, we would keep him on.
Mm. But then you must have an awful lot of teachers, because with the different ages, they need different attention.
Exactly. Well, it's absolutely extraordinary, because there isn't a musician here who doesn't want to go down and teach, which is so wonderful. They all love it. It's the most enchanting atmosphere I've ever known anywhere in a school. What is most important, you see, is that the children's practice is supervised. This is the basis of all learning of all instruments. And this is why I said in the old days the parents were so wonderful, because they would watch the boys. But this is what happens down there. We have teachers who watch the practice. There isn't one of Yehudi's friends and colleagues who doesn't want to go down, talk, teach. And so the children are actually immensely spoilt, and they're learning. They have, in other words, an Olympus, because they're learning from the topmost level.
You say down there. Is it in the country somewhere?
Yes. Yehudi found this house at Cobham, 23 miles from London, which again he bought on faith, hope and charity. Charity's a bit slow in coming, I might say, but the faith and hope are there. And he's got it, and there they are, installed. I tell you, it starts by seeing far away. And then we do the fill-up in between. But sometimes I get a heart attack, wondering whether the fill-up is ever really going to fill up.
And all these various activities of his?
Yes.
Running the school, running the health store.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't run it.
Standing on his head.
Well, it does him good.
I mean, these are all consistent, aren't they, really?
Absolutely consistent with the one person, because he hates any kind of artificiality. He hates artificiality in approach to music, just as I mentioned, all the kind of boring sides to it he can't be bothered with. Mm. Somebody else has to see about that. And he hates artificially produced foods, can't stand them.
Mm. But does he ever relax with the book?
Well, he's never tense, you see. This is it. He's not tense. He's relaxed in his work. This is the whole crux. I mean, if ever there were somebody who was an instrument, it's Yehudi. He actually is his own instrument. And he never is tense. He cannot tense. It's quite extraordinary. He can't grab things. He can't grab... That's why, again, as I said, it's wonderful for him. It's a little hard for the others, but this is the way it is. He loves reading. But the other day, I looked through... Somebody asked for his curriculum vitae. So I got it up with our excellent secretary, who's a great standby. And she and I looked down all the things of which he's president and chairman and goodness knows what. And there are 3 pages of close typescript. This is beyond playing about 10 months a year, touring and playing about 10 months a year on the move. We did a 6 weeks tour of America just now, followed by 12 hours in London when I turned Yehudi around like the Queen Mary and sent him off to France. True. Honestly, I ought to be taken on by Cunard the way I can do it.
It sounds as if Yehudi Menuhin can't say no.
Well, he does. He says no, you see. He says no to, what shall we say, 2%. And he doesn't see that the 98% that's left means working 17 hours a day minimum for the rest of the year. He thinks he's done awfully well, and he comes to me proudly and says, I have turned down that tour. So I say, well done, darling. Well, it fills up. Fills up again. I mean, if you're asked to do as many things as Yehudi is, you see, you can refuse 100 concerts and still be left with 250. This is the trouble. And then, as I said, all the things he does because he wants to help people and likes it, and it is him, and who am I to stop him doing that? I mustn't change him. It's not my place.
That was part of the Elgar Concerto, recorded when Yehudi Menuhin was a child. And now, here is the man talking about his life today.
I found more interest in life as the years go by than I did as a young man. Perhaps that filling a thirst, satisfying desires for achievement, association, in music and many other fields that I never had. I think one thing fertilizes the other. Interests in everything from the soil association to clean air and I don't know what else. I try to do my little bit toward the things I feel are important in our society. And not only in England, but in the United States as well. And that usually takes the form of writing some statement that is read at a meeting or is made public. Otherwise, personally, to keep fit, I do a certain amount of yoga exercises every day, which includes stretching, breathing, and that way. And I don't do anything, really, and I think that's perhaps one of the main reasons why I manage to keep fit and cope with so much. I hardly do anything which is really detrimental to health, which so many people do who work much less. I mean, many people do little things which are not necessarily bad things. They're enjoyable even to a certain extent. I mean, I do enjoy a little wine from time to time, but I don't drink, I don't smoke. I don't do many of the things which people find essential if they get into the habit. And then my life is fairly healthy in that I don't have to do many of the difficult things that other people do. I don't catch underground trains or stand in terrible queues in the underground at rush hours. I think I'm very lucky not to have to do those things, which must be a terrific drain. But I do, of course, travel a great deal too, so that I find plenty of stimulus and change to the continent, to the Mediterranean, to the Far East, to the United States, where I go every few months, if only for 10 days. Thus, these adventures do bring a measure of excitement and stimulus into what otherwise would certainly not be a drab life anyway.
And that historic 1932 recording of the Elgar Violin Concerto, played by Master Yehudi Menuhin, with the composer conducting, brings to an end this edition of Talking About Music. You heard Mr. and Mrs. Menuhin talking, and Shura Shakaski. So this is John Amis saying goodbye from London.